Feral Audio.
Oh my God, it's time for another episode of Drew Drogi's Minor Revelations. How are we? Oh, happy Friday. Okay, so I am going to tell a quick little story because we have a jam-packed episode. I'm very excited. It's just real delightful. I posted this on Facebook last week, so and by the time this comes out, if you are friends with me on Facebook or follow me on Facebook or whatever, you may have already seen this little story, but I just really wanted to share this thing that happened right in front of me last weekend that I kind of couldn't believe it, and I felt compelled to share it. So I was, it was in the middle of Outfest, a film festival, which is like a lot of movies, a lot of vodka, a lot of energy coming at you. I saw some incredible things. I'm going to talk about one movie later on in our conversation. But I was stressed and I was with people the whole time and it was lovely and lots of fun, of course, but just a lot coming at you. So I had like a Sunday free where I didn't have anything to do. I was like by myself, and what I love to do is just go and hide in a restaurant somewhere and just have a meal all to myself where I don't talk to anybody. I don't engage. And it's the best thing in the world for me. So I went in to a restaurant in my neighborhood that was super dead on the inside, like 1 PM or something. I walked in and there was an older man and an older woman sitting at the bar right sort of like in front of me. I was sitting at a table right behind them. And I could tell that they were strangers right away, and they were just having drinks at the bar on Sunday afternoon. And I heard the man's accent, and I heard him say, you know, all I want to do when I get on Hollywood Boulevard, I just want to, no, he said, what he's saying, sorry, I got real carried away there. He just said, all I want to do while I'm here is put a chair down on Hollywood Boulevard and just look at people. And I was like, I know that accent. That guy's from the Carolinas or thereabouts. What is this all about? So I started eavesdropping, as I love to do. And I love to people watch. It's my favorite part of my job. I found out through just listening that he was from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And I knew it. And was talking to this woman from California who lived in California, and they were being very polite at first and just kind of having casual chat. And then it just started to get a little bit deeper. The woman was saying that, you know, she had never been to the South, and she was just like, I just feel like I don't know that I could go there as a single woman. I'd be scared for lots of reasons to go and visit that place. And I feel like I would have a lot of opinions, and I'd think that there'd be a lot of issues in me going there. And he just assured her that she'd be okay, and that it's some really nice people live down there, and everybody there is just, you know, and it's a little bit of everything, and kind of in a very sweet way, in a fair way. It wasn't just like, you know, and he was like, I get it. And then he started saying that he was in town because his daughter lived in LA, and she was like, oh, that's so great, you're visiting your daughter. And he was just like, oh, I wish we had a better relationship. You know, we're not that great right now. I don't know what's going on. She's 20 and she's kind of being an asshole. And he's like, maybe I'm being an asshole too. And the woman was like, honey, everybody's an asshole when they're 20. And they started laughing, and they just started talking about the world and how scared they were, you know, in our country and what's going on. And they didn't really get super political, but they both expressed, you know, our concern that where we all are right now. And I was just sort of amazed at how this conversation was unfolding and how organic it was and how it felt very much like just two human beings. And when you talk to strangers, sometimes you're so much more, you know, willing to just give up information because there's no stakes. You're like, I'm never going to see this person again. So I'm going to reveal a lot more than I probably would to somebody. And I don't have any expectations. I don't have to be on good behavior. I'm just going to talk. And you saw that happening. And You know, and then they kind of both made each other feel okay. And she was telling him about things to do in LA and think, you know, and just saying, you know, and I think that he was sort of, you know, expecting everybody in LA to be image obsessed and sort of, you know, snotty. And she was expecting everybody from South Carolina to be ignorant and angry or whatever. And they just were just two human beings talking. And it was really wonderful. And then, he got up to leave. He paid for his drink and he got up to leave and then just said, it was really nice to meet you. And he introduced himself and she introduced herself and he gave her a hug and he walked out the door. And the woman just was sitting at the bar completely dumbfounded. And she just said, I don't think I've ever met anyone so nice. And she didn't know like what to do with it. It was like, I can't believe that just happened. That's the nicest man. And it wasn't even like, what they said was so powerful or like, you know, life changing. It was just that they were very vulnerable and honest with each other and human with each other. And she just kept saying, I don't even know if I said thank you to him. I don't know if I, I didn't even get his last name. I'd love to find him on Facebook just to say thank you. And she said, you know, women my age don't ever get talked to, don't ever get seen just by a stranger. And, you know, and this man wasn't hitting on me. He wasn't being gross. He was just being so kind to me. And she was kind of saying all this to the bartender. And the bartender was like, just pass it on. Pass on the kindness, you know, like. And she, you know, she kept sitting there and it was something to her. It was just like, she said, I just have never had that happen to me in my life. And I am sitting there by myself watching the whole thing like a complete creep and getting really emotional. And it really affected me. And I just, it just was that realization of like, I needed to be here and see this. I needed to see two people connect and talk and realize that that's just what we need to be doing is just talking to each other more and not so afraid of the other and not so afraid that like, oh, this person's going to want something from me or they're going to judge me in some other way. And just realize that like, you know, that's this is where we are right now. And to make it all about me, why I love doing this show. It's like I get to bring people on and selfishly get to hear some of their fears, some of their failures, some of the things they don't love about themselves and realize that we're all, you know, so much the same and we go through so many of the same things. And, you know, if we keep talking to each other, we're going to be okay or at least feel okay in a moment, which is incredibly powerful and not to be thrown away. Yeah, so there's that. How about that? No twist. I love to talk about horrible people and say, oh my God, this awful thing happened. And so I just wanted to share two people being nice. All right, that's it. Let's have a show. I'm sitting here with a wonderful and delightful Casey Fay and Geralyn Flood.
Hello.
How are you two?
I'm good.
Good.
Hot, but good.
Hot. I know. It's so hot. It's ridiculous. It's apparently like even worse in New York, which is like impossible to be hot there.
Yeah.
So, I mean, at least we're here in gorgeous, austere Burbank and we can deal with it with the heat. I finally got air conditioning in my place after 2 years of living there because I really don't need it.
Oh, you don't need it?
The best. I really don't except in like the hottest months, like right now through like August.
Yep. Yeah.
But, and I'm rarely home. And you go to my place, it's like, are you in the process of moving in? And I've been there 2 years,
right.
You know, and I know my mom was listening to this the other day. She was like, I can't believe you haven't hung any pictures on the wall. And I'm like, nope, I'll get there yeah, one of these days. Maybe in the 2020s, I'll do that.
Take your time. Yeah. Got to know where they're putting them.
Exactly. But I finally got air conditioning and it's just the greatest thing in the world. I'm like, how have I lived without it?
Yeah. We did that last year and in our bedroom and it was a game changer.
Yeah.
I could actually touch my husband at night because normally I'd be like, good night, don't touch me, don't hug me, don't look at me, please, it's very hot, thank you.
Oh, it's awful in the middle of the night.
Yeah.
And it used to be You know, I mean, I've lived out here for like 17 years, and it used to be cold at night, even when it was hot during the day. That was a desert climate. And now it's just like the South here. It's like hot at night and to sleep, and you just sweat through your sheets, and it's just...
Have you done the thing yet? I do this where, because I have air conditioning, that I'll go outside unaware of what the world is like how warm it is. I'll bring like a hoodie and like I'm wearing jackets and like heavy socks.
Well, because we're trained to like bring layers here because it can get super cold at night. And that's the thing that people laugh at us in LA when we're like, we have all this stuff and then we're wearing shorts and flip-flops during the day. But it swings back and forth.
I still haven't worked it out. I'm from New York and I've been here 15, 16 years. Mm-hmm. I still don't know how to dress for California.
Yeah.
I'm either way too hot or way too cold.
Right.
Yeah. And wearing like an awkward sweatshirt that I have in the car because I don't know what else to, you know.
I know. I think I have so many things from your brother-in-law, our friend Sean Buchholz, because who has done this show before, he always has things in his car, and we're hanging out, and he's like, do you need a sweater? Do you need a... Because I'm like always wearing shorts and freezing and not knowing how to dress and how to do anything.
That's nice. You should start a business out of that or something.
I know. You know? Like, I know. Like it could be like an Uber, like renting hoodies.
Yeah.
And
he drives
around.
That'd
be so weird.
He drives around.
Like wearing a rental hoodie. Like
but
what, City Bike or something? You can like rent it and you have to dump
it
off
back.
Somewhere.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
It gets like sanitized and it's some awful bag.
There's money to be made.
The visual.
I think
of that.
It's really good. I mean, oh, I know. I just like that business. So what that's like, just a bunch of sweaty, weird tops and just trying to like, hose things down, sanitize them, making money for what, like a dollar? What do you rent? What would it cost to rent a hoodie?
It'd be like Redbox, where like that day it's real cheap. It's like a dollar. But then if you keep it the next day, it's like way more expensive.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
He's going to make his money on the chance people aren't going to want to return the
thing. Exactly, you're not going to turn
it back in. They're going to fall in love with that hoodie.
Right.
And then now you
but then you have to, then it has to be not quite nice enough that they will return it.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. It's a little itchy.
Right. It's not going to fit perfect.
Or just, like little ill-formed, you know. I think we have an idea for a great business.
That's what this is about, right? Coming up with money.
Oh, yeah. This podcast is about what business are we going to come up with.
Is it like Shark Tank?
It's like Shark Tank. And then immediately after we record this, we have to go work on our project.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Awesome.
And we work on it until we finish it.
Okay.
So it's usually, it's been a very,
very time consuming.
Well, especially for me, because I have to do one every week.
Yeah.
And
like 120 some business.
Yeah. And none of them have really gotten off the ground. But I think we have the answer.
We're starting strong.
What else is going on? What's how are your Julys?
July's good. I just met my girlfriend's family.
Oh, that's cool.
For the first time yesterday.
How was that?
That was good. It was good. I liked it. She was very worried. I wasn't that worried.
Mm-hmm.
They live in Florida too, so it's like this isn't going to affect my life that much.
Right. Exactly.
in the nicest way.
Right.
It was like, oh, these are great people. They're all very fun. If they weren't, it also would have been fine.
Right, of course.
You know.
How long have you guys been dating?
Like 5.5, 6 months.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Okay, that's
Get,
great.
Know the number exactly.
Yeah, I got it.
If you want to
exactly.
Really
well, it just depends when this is released. You know, I wasn't sure of the release date on this episode.
Good
so.
Save.
Yeah,
really good
done.
Save. That's nice.
Good training.
Yeah. That's good. Oh, that's great. And they were just in town visiting?
In town visiting, yeah. Just having a little trip. You know, doing the LA thing. First time in LA.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. So a little bit of touristy stuff and a little bit of what we would actually do with our lives out here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What have you guys done? Have you done any touristy stuff with them?
They're all out now, like Santa Monica, and they can do Malibu. And
oh, yeah.
They did a hike at Griffith. And, sounds like a little touristy, but also a little bit of what we do.
That's nice. That's good. It doesn't feel so like we have to go to Universal Studios and wait in line.
Hollywood
and we have
Boulevard.
To go do the Hollywood Boulevard tour and the tour of homes.
Right.
The star tours, which has always been so strange to me. Even when we like visited here when I was a kid, I was like, who wants to go? First of all, I mean, well, my parents are in the furniture business and my mom drew up the floor plans to our house, our dream house in Lincolnton, North Carolina. So they're very, you know, they love going and looking at houses. And so Sunday afternoons, we would always, after church, we would drive around and just look at houses under construction.
Just the outside?
No, sometimes we would park and go inside just random houses being built. We would just go and look at them, and you could just walk around in houses, which I think is illegal to do.
Yeah, I did that as a kid, but I feel like we were told not to.
Yeah, because what if, I mean, for insurance reasons, there's no way they can just be, but my parents would just do it, and I hated it more than anything.
More
it
was, than church?
It was so, I liked church even more because because at least, you know, there were like stories there. I learned to daydream a lot in church.
Yeah.
And I learned to like form really strong opinions. I could listen and go, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Or whatever. And also there was people watching in church. Sure. All those sort of things.
Yeah.
And then there was, you know, there was parts of church that I really liked and youth group I always really liked. But I, you know. But that just the it was the definition of boredom that to me, like driving around just aimless and just parking and going into these like houses and just like seeing how they, like floor plans are laid out, and they love it. So I do remember when we came out here to visit, they wanted to look at stars' houses and how they lit and whatever. But I just think that is just the most boring possible thing. And also, like, who knows if it's true?
Exactly.
That, you know, you drive around and you're like, this is where Bob Hope lives. Here's Matt LeBlanc's house. Here's Alf. And it doesn't, I mean, you're like.
Alf has a nice house.
It's a really nice house.
Which is weird, because he is just a puppet, right? But it's not the guy who controls him. It's his house.
It's literally Alf's house.
Sits on the same couch.
It's got to be nice, because it's got to lure in a bunch of cats for him to
eat. Yeah.
Do you remember he ate cats?
Yeah,
that was... I can't believe you just referenced that Alf ate cats. I love that so much.
It was always the most disturbing thing to me as a child. Like, oh, Alf with a sitcom and it's an alien. Oh, and he eats cats. Mm-hmm. Like, they thought that would be like a really cute detail about him. Like, of all things, like, eat squirrels. Don't eat cats.
Someone must have been like, he's not feeling like enough of an alien. We got to give him something weird.
Right, exactly.
What's his weird thing?
Or one of the writers hates cats.
Oh, yeah, it must have been
surely
that, too.
That
it would have been like, oh, this will be my revenge. And I'm going to get... Oh, my God. Yeah. But, yeah, that's nice, though, that they were in town. Mm-hmm. I had actually... I had dinner this week with two girls that I went to high school with who I hadn't seen in 8 million years. And one was visiting, and she was on like a trip with her husband and another couple. And then another girl who lives in town who I didn't even know that she lived in LA, and because she's in Santa Monica. And
right.
So we had this like really great, you know, catch up. And it was like, you know, and they were sort of doing a lot of the same stuff. They were like kind of, they wanted to go to Venice Beach and see that. And they wanted to go to Griffith Park. Like, you know, the and I was like, oh, that's good. That's the fun stuff to do as opposed to the super touristy, theme parky stuff.
Yeah, get into the actual city of it. Like, I like to travel and be like, what would it be like if I lived in this city?
Absolutely.
Like, what would my life be like? Where would I shop? Where would I eat? Where would I... So that's what I try to do when I travel places.
When I go places, I always want to find like weird little mom and pop restaurants and like local things. You know, and leave space to just get lost and not feel like you have to be like, go here to go there. So, that's great.
Did you guys talk high school stuff? Did you like...
A little bit. It was a lot about like catching up on people, because one of the girls, like, she's like, I stay in touch with everybody from high school.
Wow.
And I know all the stuff and the drama. And then I found out that a lot of people I went to high school with are grandparents.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like, oh, my Lord.
Yeah.
You know, and I mean, not a lot, but there are a handful. And
my brain cannot process.
No, I know. I cannot imagine a 40-year-old grandparent, but it exists. And
wow.
Yeah.
And what kind of drama? You said that you learned some of the drama that was going on in the town?
Oh, I mean, you know, all this stuff about like, you know, and then just all these things. And I'm sitting there going, oh, wow. Oh, boy.
And can you remember who they're talking about? Or?
Some of them I can't. What's weird is that it's like when you get with somebody you haven't seen in a million years, the names come back to you. Like something, your brain comes back and you start naming people. And I'm like, I have not thought of this person's name. I haven't said this person's name. But I remember people from high school better than, you know, as we all do, the people that, you know, anybody.
I totally have, like, I don't know, I have a weird, there's a couple of people that on Facebook who have found me from high school. I'm like, oh, yeah, totally, I remember you. But then they're like, do you remember this person? And I'm like, no.
Oh,
and this woman that was involved with I went to an all-girls Catholic high school, and this woman was involved with the alumni association. She's like, yeah, they've been looking for you. They don't know where you are. Like, and I was like, yeah, that's great. I'm happy.
Yeah, I've fallen off the map.
Yeah.
I also love, like, that means they want money. Like, the alumni association's really interested in what
where
you're up
you
to.
Are.
They will send you. They want money.
Someone said you live in L.A. They're interested.
Uh-huh.
They're
wondering
what's going on.
It's like, that's totally fine that you don't find me. And, you know, I know I have my college. I get something. I feel like every 2 months asking for money from my college. God, and I was like, I do you know how expensive it is to go to the college that I went to? And it's like, you know, let me like, you know, make a big donation when I'm able to do that.
Right.
Right now I'm trying to pay my, you know, right. cell phone bill.
Also, yeah. but for me too, like I went to NYU and they had someone, a young kid call me, you know, yeah. asking for money. And I was like, no, I'm not going to. He's like, I understand if you can't give it this time. I said, no, no, let me correct you. I can. I have
right.
the capability.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I just said, I kind of dropped it. Like he kept was like saying, I know if you can't do 100, then maybe you can do 50. If you can't do 50, I said, no, no, I can do it. I choose not to.
Yeah. Right.
In light of what's going on in Washington, D.C. and
yes.
with Planned Parenthood,
yeah.
I'm going to put my money
yes,
in other directions.
Absolutely. Yes.
And also, you have a $4 billion like fund for the school. You're fine.
You're right. fine. Mm-hmm. And I know. It's like so, it is so strange. And it's like, yeah, like I, you know, donate to the ACLU,
right,
the, join
exactly.
the ACLU this year and get them. And I was like, and then like, yeah, you think like these, there's organizations that are actually working towards a better cause. Mm-hmm. And of course, if it ever came up like, oh, NYU is struggling, you know,
right,
you'd
totally.
Be like, oh, let's do a fundraiser. Let's do a thing. Also, like, I'm just a, you know, believer in like participating in like fundraisers for things as opposed to just like sending money. That's
yeah.
just going to go.
Totally.
And I'm like, I want to give it to like a cause that I really believe in or, you know,
mm-hmm.
and I'm sorry, but tuition, college tuition is insanely
ridiculous.
Expensive.
Yeah.
So that's what we did for 4 years.
Yeah.
We were giving you lots of money.
I went to a private Catholic school too, and it's one of those like, as I think it's probably most Catholic universities are, they're like one of those like on Spotlight at the end of the movie where they like list places where they had priests who were like
oh, wow.
in hiding.
Oh, wow.
Like my college is like on there. And
wow.
so then there's like this other level of like, oh, not only do I not want to give money to you because I gave so much when I went there, but also
right.
I don't want to give money to you.
Right.
Right. Yeah, 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 exactly. Because I'm not.
You fucked it up.
Yeah. And like you are actively protecting these criminals,
yeah.
these predators.
Yeah.
You know, and you're, and the message that you're driving home is just, is so against what I stand for.
Yeah.
So you guys both went to Catholic private schools, like through high school?
No, I went to public my whole life and then a small school for college.
Oh, for college.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
okay,
I went
great.
To Catholic school through high school.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. So we flipped it.
Yeah. I was co-ed through eighth grade and then all women
yeah.
through high school.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
My college was an all guys college and I didn't really realize it until I got there for the tour.
How did you not realize that?
Well, because it was a school very close to where I lived.
Uh-huh.
And I'd kind of like, my favorite, I took all around the Midwest, looked at different schools, and then like in Minnesota, you can apply for all the private schools with one application.
Oh, nice.
And I just
oh,
hate
wow.
paper. I hate paperwork. So I was
sure.
like, I'll do that. I didn't even apply to my favorite school because it was like 5 pages and I was just,
oh my God.
So I was like, okay. So I got into one very close to me and I'd been out there for things throughout my life. So I was like, I know the school. I don't really need to take a tour. And then it was like you go out there to like the 3 weekends before or whatever to like start kind of figuring stuff out.
Right.
Take a test back in those days. And someone they're like, any questions? And one of the kids is like, what time do like girls have to leave the dorms? And I was like, what an idiot. This is college. Like,
right.
And
they're right.
Like, good question. Midnight on the weekdays and 1 a.m. on the weekends. And I was like, oh fuck!
Where are when? Where were the girls? And where were the girls?
There was
a
sister school in like the town next door. We'd take classes together, so it wasn't as bad.
Okay.
Once you moved off campus, you were it felt like a real college. But
right.
I was all of a sudden just I was like, oh fuck! I've already committed to this place.
Wow!
I'm going to an all boys college.
Yeah,
completely didn't think of that. But I wanted to go to a small school because I realized teachers are people like anyone else in high school, and if they knew me, I got a better grade than if they didn't know me.
Oh yeah.
And so I was like, I'm gonna go to a small school, so teachers will know me. Because the one class
yeah.
I took with like 200 kids, I got like what I should have got in my grade, and I was like, what?
What do you mean?
I get A's.
I could have been really. I know. I could have been like, yeah. I went to a small college too, and I really am glad I did because I also just wanted that connection with my teachers, and I wanted to just. And just, you know, I mean, I graduated, there were 12 majors in my department, and that was a big class.
Yeah.
Wow. There were usually, I mean, it was a theater major at Wake Forest, which is not the school, that's not usually where people go to get a theater degree, but
sure.
it was a great theater department, and we all got to be in everything, and we were designing and directing and doing everything, and they had so much money, so like the productions were incredible, you
cool.
know. And, but we got so much hands-on, you know, work with that, and it was like, yeah, we all were. And I appreciate that in retrospect. I needed that. I don't think I could have handled the giant school.
Yeah.
when I was 18. I mean, you know, I in my head, I was like, I should go to a conservatory, but I don't think I could have handled that emotionally.
I
started at Hampshire College at first, which is this alternative school in Amherst, Massachusetts.
Uh-huh.
And it was 1,000 students, I think, at the time.
Oh, wow.
But it was like all kind of Montessori based. Like uh-huh. you can create your own curriculum, you mm-hmm. create your own classes, you have evaluations and all this. So coming from an all-girls Catholic school where they, you know, beat you to do your homework
right. mm-hmm.
to this like, do your work or don't do your work, and that's cool. And I was mm-hmm. like, don't do my work? Okay.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's all it I was, heard.
Creating yeah. majors yeah. called pizza.
Exactly. And boys.
And boys.
and it was not a good fit. So I yeah. left and then took some time off and then transferred to NYU. Uh-huh. And that was much better for me because it was...
And what school were you in at NYU?
Gallatin.
Okay.
So it was individualized study, so it was what I wanted, but there was more of a curriculum, and, uh-huh. and you had to do a thesis at the end, and it was challenging
yeah.
the way that worked for me, both
yeah.
covered
yeah,
both
yeah,
sides
yeah.
of it.
That's awesome. I mean, it's like so fascinating how like what we all do at that at that stage, and then like where we end up and what we end up
yeah.
doing.
Totally.
And then there are people out here that like didn't go to college, and it's like fascinating to me. And it's like also it's a West Coast thing too. I think people that grow up here, it's like sort of not really a big deal to go to college or not. And like where I grew up, it's like you will be doing this.
Yeah.
100%. It was never presented to me as an option of yeah. not going to college. And I'm glad I went, but it's also like, you know, I moved yeah. out here when I was 22 and I was like, oh, I'm old and behind and have no experience.
Yeah. I did the same thing. I was like 26 yeah. and I was like, uh-huh. how ever will I catch up?
Uh-huh.
I screwed it. Like, I pursued none of my interests in college.
What did you major in?
I just drank. Uh-huh. I majored in drinking. Communication degree.
Okay.
Again, because it was a small school, so they had uh-huh. pretty broad majors.
Uh-huh.
But like, I didn't do any theater. They had an improv team at my school. Didn't do it.
Uh-huh.
Didn't do any kind of anything.
But you wanted to, though. You always knew.
Yeah, I think I did. Absolutely. But I the Minnesota version of that dream was like, I'll write commercials. That felt like.
Right.
But
they don't ever really present to you the idea that you can actually do it.
Right.
You know, and they sort of poo-poo it the whole way down. And especially in academia, they're like, you're not really going to do this. You
right.
might teach this
yeah,
and
yeah.
study this, but you're not really going to ever
do this. It's all theoretical.
Or
it's a fun thing to do. If you like it, do it at
sure.
night.
Sure.
You know,
right.
be a lawyer
right,
during
right.
the day and then go sure. be in a community theater play or something.
Right.
But so my college was just kind of like, you know, watching basketball games fun. What if I'm drunk watching a basketball game? Oh,
right.
that's more fun.
Yeah, right,
class
right,
is okay.
Exactly.
What if I'm drunk in
what
class?
Drunk
oh, that's
class.
More fun.
Oh, that's way
yeah,
more
yeah.
fun.
Just kept doing that.
Oh, I wish that was fun. I'm so crabby when I have to do anything if I'm drinking.
Yeah.
Like all I want to do is hang out and talk to people when I'm drinking.
Sure.
If I have to do any people are like, you know, like at jobs and stuff and
yeah.
people are like, "Oh, let's have a drink." I'm like, yeah. I get immediately so cranky when I have to go to work and it's like just feels like punishment.
Yeah.
So I just, you know, but anyway, do you remember what you and I first worked together and what we did together?
I don't know.
We did the craziest thing. I was thinking about it on the way over here. We were on a Black Eyed Peas
yes, I do remember
sponsored
now. That's right.
show.
Yeah.
What?
So the Black Eyed Peas.
Sorry?
Will.i.am.
Yep. Oh, sure.
Fergie.
As in those. Uh-huh. Yeah.
Fergalicious.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
They were getting into comedy for a while.
Yeah.
As you do.
Sure, uh-huh. sure.
And they were doing this like weird rap battle challenge called Cold Maxon.
That's right.
And...
But rather than get really real rappers,
no, they got comedians to like improvise rap.
Yeah,
and I was one of the judges.
That's right.
Thank God I was not one of the contestants.
I was going to say, did you rap? Because I'm going to look
but
for that.
But Casey was great. You were so good, and you were one of the contestants.
That's right.
And we recorded. We filmed a bunch of stuff, most of which never ended up anywhere.
Yeah, but we filmed like LA Live.
Yeah,
like,
we did it. And
event and.
I remember it was like there was somebody. Oh, Jeremy Renner came on and did a thing
yeah.
with us.
Yeah,
at LA
right.
Live. And we were there for like hours. It
That's
was like,
right.
you know, I remember it was Dave Holmes, James Adomian, and I were the judges.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And Hal Rudnick was like was doing some sort of field work or something.
The hip hop cred.
You know, all that. You know, I mean, when you think hip hop, I definitely think of these, you know.
Sure.
These
giants.
You know, white,
of the
these white, you know, dudes that are just going to sit there and, you know, whatever we're doing. And then, yeah. And so.
That's
yeah,
right.
and then I did something at his house. Like I was.
Oh, really? You got
well,
that
there
far.
Was like a. There was. Oh, yeah.
But I didn't make it to that level.
I just brought that up to let you know I've been to his house.
Oh, I'm sorry, you dropped this name.
Oh, yes, that gorgeous name. No, he was actually lovely and
yeah.
great. It was just the weirdest thing that like being in his house and like filming this thing where it was like. it was for like hip hop school. It's like we were teaching kids to learn how to rap, and I was the teacher. I don't know how I got this job.
Yeah.
But I was the teacher, and then like we filmed a final episode where I got into trouble, and I was, my character was doing cocaine.
Wow.
And I got
with the kids?
Like in front of the kid. Like we filmed it separately, but it was as if the I was like losing my mind.
Right.
I don't know who thought this was a responsible or a fun idea.
Right.
And so I got called into the principal's office, which was William's house, basically. Oh, yeah. And we filmed it. And then I was like called to task by that, and then, but I never saw the light of day. It's one of those projects.
I wonder why.
I don't know. You know, I mean, maybe.
Because the way you described it, I would be watching week after week.
And it's also like, we filmed a lot of it though. And there were these quick little things, like I was teaching them how to like pop and lock, none of which I know how to do.
Right.
I mean, I think the joke was the teacher's so clueless and,
they started seeing it like, oh, he better, I guess let's have him be on cocaine or something.
I know. They were like, we don't have any other idea what to do, why he's doing this, and wouldn't it make sense to have Will.i.am be the teacher, whatever, and teach them actually how to do it? I don't know.
He had his own website, his own comedy website, because we would film stuff there a lot. I remember, in this little studio, and I remember just being like, I'm in Will.i.am's recording studio doing a weird comedy video.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know if you can find those or not.
I think it's true. Like, comedians want to be rock stars, and rock stars want to be comedians. Like, we just sort of idolize what the other one does on, like, a really crazy level. We're like, oh, my God, how could you ever do that?
Yeah. Absolutely.
And so I think that's like, oh, I want to do that. But it's just the same as, like, when actors start up in bands, it's like, Gary Sinise is like, I'm going to have the Lieutenant Dan band. It's like, maybe don't do that.
Yeah, actually, I would see that one. I would see the Lieutenant Dan band.
I mean, just for weird, weird sake, sure.
Only if you would come out as Lieutenant Dan.
Exactly. Each one's a different version of his story.
Yes.
Each one further along in the...
Also, I'm just like, I sort of judge Gary Sinise a little bit for being as talented of an actor as he is, who's had such an amazing career, who's done so many crazy things. To pick that character from that garbage fest of a movie and like be like, this is what gonna be my spinoff.
Sure, yeah.
You know, I mean, I don't know what he should do, but I'm like, you're from Steppenwolf. Like, you've done incredible work. You're really good. Why are you going, oh, you know what? I'm going to Bubba Gump my life and be this and call this character,
Does he actually have a lieutenant?
He has a band called Lieutenant Dan Band.
Oh, wow. I thought you totally made that up.
No. It's real.
I thought he was hypothetically getting in an argument about something you created.
I'm so mad at this fake thing that I just created. And oh my God, who am I going to hurt? No, it's real.
Wow.
No, it's real. Yeah. And he toured around with it.
But I guess it's the... Like, you and I know, we know he's from Steppenwolf, but if you said Gary Sinise, they'd be like, I don't know who.
I know. Sadly,
so
I know. Yeah.
If that works.
I know.
But couldn't it be the Apollo 13?
Sure. I know. Exactly. I don't know. The whole thing is just, weird.
It is a little weird.
Yeah. It's just sort of like, it's strange that you would do that, but whatever.
You must just have friends who are musicians, right? And they want to make money and be like, hey, wouldn't it be fun if we all hung out and then we got to make money and you could sing or whatever? We'll use your name.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay,
it's like Jared Leto and Keanu Reeves and all kinds of people do it. And it's always just like, okay, cool.
You know? Kevin Bacon and his brother and all that. Yeah.
Right.
But then just call it Gary Sinise and...
That's the thing. I'm so much of a narcissist. I'd be like, I'm not making my character. I'm putting my name in it.
Yeah.
And if you don't know who I am, then you'll learn, or whatever. And then I'm booking them in front of two people at a Chili's 2 at the airport. Like,
Chili's
here I am.
Chili's 2.
Chili's 2 Go. I think it's the full title.
That's right.
Oh, sure.
Where you can grab taquitos on your way to Albuquerque.
There's people going like,
that'll be special on a plane.
Real special. People love you for that. When you bring hot Tex-Mex onto a hot, crowded plane. Well, I want to hear some stories. I want to hear some revelations. Who wants to?
Do you want to go first?
Sure.
All right, go for it, Casey.
Great. So, like most older brothers, mine was the greatest. Taught me everything I need to know about life as... He was 5 years older than me.
Okay.
And as an 8-year-old boy, he taught me, you know, he introduced me to the Fat Boys.
Weird
Crushing. Al. Yep. Weird Al.
Disorderlies.
Vanilla Ice, all the classics. All the greatest, all the greatest stuff that there is to know as a kid. But the weird thing about my brother, I guess the unique thing was like he never bullied me. As an older brother, he was never mean to me. Like, he would annoy me. He'd do that thing where, like, he put his face or hand too close to my face. I'm not touching you. Or if we were playing basketball in the driveway and a car drove by, he'd play, like, extra hard defense in case that was a college scout. Then he would get the scholarship. all those things that...
I love that. College scouts just driving just by.
Sure. That's what we thought
of kids. Driving, of course.
Driving around our neighborhood.
That
also,
guy.
Like, there's the age difference is probably good in that, like, 5 years is, like...
We're not in the same school.
Not ever in the same school.
Yeah.
He's old enough to know, like, I'm bigger and older than, you know, than him, and I could, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But he would never, like, I would go over to my friend's house, and their older brothers would, like, punch him and, you know, sit on them and just do, and they'd sometimes even do it to me, even though they're not my older brother. But my brother never did any of that stuff. And the reason is he was a pacifist. I remember in school, he had to choose between if he wanted to learn Spanish or French. And living in Minnesota, he chose French because he thought if a war broke out, he's more likely to run to Canada than to Mexico.
Oh my gosh. How interesting.
That was his
wow,
logic.
Wow, and I love that he was already thinking like
absolutely.
That
at
that age. Wow.
And I understood that because I thought I was a pacifist too, or so I thought. So this takes place, it's a regular summer day. I'm 8, you know, he's 5 years older, so whatever that is.
we'll never know.
We'll never know.
We're in the arts.
next episode, someone will tell us. And so a typical day, you know, my dad was at work. My mom was doing everything else. Our job was just to play. And we were up in my treehouse. I call it mine because I won a coloring competition from a local bank.
Oh, my God. So wait, you colored and won, and you won a treehouse from
the
bank?
Well, what actually happened was it was like a picture of an eagle in the sky. Every kid had to color the same thing. Mm-hmm. And so my mom had the idea, let's get cotton balls for the clouds. And glue them in the clouds.
So really, your mother
multimedia.
Won.
Absolutely, absolutely. So then it's like kind of like three dimensional. It'll stand out. You still color, and so I took like second prize, I think.
Okay.
I think first place was probably like one of the bank manager's kids or something. That's what I think.
Oh, I love it.
But so I got.
So if second prize was a treehouse,
it wasn't. It was $50.
Okay.
But in my 8-year-old brain, I had never received money, and so to me, like when you get money, you can just get whatever you want.
Sure.
And so I wanted a treehouse.
Sure.
So I was like, I want a treehouse, not realizing how much lumber costs and all that stuff.
Right.
So my parents said, okay, they put most of the money obviously into it. It also wasn't a treehouse. It was like a next to a tree. It wasn't actually in a tree.
Okay.
And it wasn't so much a house as it was like a stand.
Okay.
It didn't have a roof. It wasn't exactly what I imagined. But again, I was only putting $50 into this thing.
Right.
So I didn't exactly get what I wanted.
So it was a shelf.
So it was a shelf with like a little
tree adjacent
guard around it so you wouldn't fall off. And then a rope swing that you could walk into. And that's like the one opening area was. Mm-hmm. So we were sitting in there, me and my brother talking, just having a great time. And we were at this time huge Dukes of Hazzard fans.
Oh, sure. Sure. Bo and Luke and Daisy.
Exactly. They had been showing replays on KMSP local channel 9 all day during the summer, so we got really into it. It's like two brothers, you know, going around Hog County just kicking ass.
Never
like,
opening doors, just jumping right into
exactly.
the car.
What's not to love about that?
Sure.
So we loved it. And so we were sitting there talking, and my brother kind of, you know, I don't know, we're just talking to you. He's like, man, you know, I hate Boss Hog. Because Boss Hog is always mean. Not the most controversial statement in the world. But as a child, I knew that if you use hyperbolic language like always and never, you're usually almost always wrong, right?
Right.
So I kind of went back at him. I was like, well, you know, you can't say always. Like, Boss Hog is mean, sure, but he's like, not always mean. He's like, no, he's always mean. And I was like, well, you know, I started kind of formulating my plan in the nicest way. I'm like, well, actually, I think what you mean here. And I could tell he wasn't listening to me. He was just trying to like win the argument.
Uh-huh.
And it just got me so mad. He's like, Boss Hog's always mean. I was like, what about the Christmas episodes? You know? And he's like, well, even then, he's doing it to serve himself. That's not a... And so we're kind of arguing, and we'd started sitting down, and now we're like face to face, just yelling in each other's faces about Boss Hog. And I don't know if he lunged at me, probably not, because he's a pacifist, or if he started to step away, which is probably more likely what he did.
Mm-hmm.
But the next thing I knew, I had my hands on his shoulders, and I pushed him, and he flew out of the treehouse and like time stopped, and like it's like, I don't know, 5 feet or something. And in that moment, I just thought like I killed my brother.
Oh my God.
And we went from arguing to like seeing in his face just nothing but fear.
Right.
And me just like nothing but fear. And you know, it must have taken a second or two, but it felt like forever. And
we're just
looking at each other like, we're best friends. What have you done? Why are you doing this?
Uh-huh.
Like, and he landed butt first on the ground with like his arms and his legs behind him and forward him, kind of stopping him. And just, I was standing over him on the treehouse in this position of power that I didn't really like anymore. And I felt terrible. And he was just looking up at me and still so afraid. And then instantly it just, tears, absolutely tears. He just goes screaming, running inside. I remember standing on top of that treehouse and having like three.
And how far up are you?
It's like probably 4.5 feet, maybe 5.5 feet, uh-huh. 6 feet, something like that. So it was definitely a fall, like
enough to hurt.
Enough to hurt.
Really hurt, yeah.
Especially for an 8-year-old, I don't really understand consequences of a lot of actions.
Sure, because you're all id and you're so like, I'm mad.
Exactly.
Push. Right.
And so we had this moment where like the first thing I thought once I saw him run inside to tell my mom was like, okay, he didn't break his butt. I'm glad, because you can't run with a broken butt.
Right,
I knew
right,
that.
Clearly.
I knew that.
We know that.
I knew that. My second thing was like, I had just like this, I guess, revelation where it was like, I'm never going to use anger again to try to solve my problems.
Wow.
It just like I lost control and it destroyed me.
Yeah.
And then the third thing was that I still thought Boss Hogg isn't always, not always mean. He's sometimes
mean. I just love that at 8 years old, you knew like you can't use hyperbole.
Yeah.
Because I don't think people to this day, I mean, we grown adults where it's everyone is always and never and, you know, and it's something that, you know, and you and I both teach improv and we're like, we tell people don't like label people just you're always this way.
Right.
Because then it's like, why is today important if they're always this person?
Or, exactly.
You know, and, you know, I think that's so interesting at that age that you were like, you just knew like that's there. People are more complex than that.
Yeah.
Even these like ridiculous cigar chomping, like
all white wear,
you know, Roscoe P. Train bossing.
Yeah.
You know, these people who probably are, if anyone is always me, because they're every week, the writers are like, what can we get Boss Hogg to do terrible this week?
Exactly.
You know? But I love that, you know, and I love that you saw that. You know, my brother is 2.5 years younger, and we argued quite a bit up until high school. Like, we haven't really had a major. You know, we've had our stuff,
right.
And as adults, we've got into it. We're family, but for the most part, like we're really close, and we're really and we have been since high school, but. We would get into it and we would, and you know, and there was one time that I threw him into like a wall, like a corner of a wall, and like he had to get stitches in his head.
Yeah.
You know, and even younger than that, when we were like six, I was maybe six or no, I was probably seven and he was probably five or something. He had a really bad biting problem. He would bite all the time. And they tried everything they could to deter him from doing that. And I never did that. So they were just sort of like, what's up with our youngest who's just biting people?
Yeah.
And they always, you know, they said, whatever you do, don't bite the kid back, because that's teaching him that biting
it
is
works.
Right. And it's a thing. Well, my brother, there was a time I stole one of his He-Man figures or something, or I wouldn't give it back. And the drama, the stakes couldn't be higher.
Yeah.
Sure.
And he chased me down and pinned me down and bit me on the chest. And as my dad would retell it, my dad would say, a full indention of upper and lower teeth, as if he was like a raptor or something, like he'd unhinge his jaw and just attach it to my chest. But he bit me right on the chest. And my dad was so mad, and he grabbed my brother and bit him in the, on the arm, like really hard.
Wow.
And my brother never bit again.
Wow.
It was like, oh, that hurts.
That's what that is.
That's what I need to not do.
Yeah.
So it was like, and my dad was like, it wasn't even thinking, like, it was just total reaction, you know.
Wow.
But like I remember hurting when I hurt my brother. I remember that we were upstairs in our house when we were living in Charlotte, and I remember doing that and being like, I have an ability to hurt someone else.
Yeah.
Because I think you feel invincible and you think other people are invincible, and you don't really think logically like, oh, I could actually do this thing.
For sure. Especially as a kid. It's like, people talk to you like you don't have any power.
Right, exactly. So, well, that's the thing,
too.
To
learn that, like...
And also, when you're in class, you're with kids the same size. And so, generally, it's a fair fight. But you know, you got a good one in for your older brother.
Exactly. Yeah. I know. Well, that's so... And it's so great to, like, have that realization. Like, this doesn't solve anything.
Yeah.
And do you still, like, if you get... worked up, do you still kind of go, nope, push my brother, not going to do that?
Yeah,
do
honestly, you? I don't really get worked up all that much. I think my girlfriend, since we were talking about earlier, she thinks I'm like keeping a lot of Midwestern stuff down. One day it's all going to be like, I'm angry from years.
Right,
but,
right.
But yeah, if I do, yeah, I mean, yeah, there was two, that was the second time. There's one other time around that same age where I need a school kid in the balls and remember like, holy shit, after doing it and him like running around the playground and being like, and like.
Did he deserve it?
Not really, no. He was following me around. I was like, quit following me. And quit following me. If you do that, I'm going to do something. Then I did something. And then, so those two moments were enough for me to be like, no, it's not my bag. I'm not into that.
Yeah.
Impressive.
Yeah.
Wow.
But who knows? Maybe I'll go crazy one day. And
hey, listen, have you seen Straw Dogs?
I have.
Maybe you.
I'll go watch it.
It's actually a terrible, stupid movie. You've seen it, Gerlin? It's Dustin Hoffman, and it's like a Sam Peckinpah movie. And it was just like, it's so violent. Mm-hmm. It's so crazy. It's like Dustin Hoffman, you know, he's always great. But like, he has a British wife, this really pretty blonde woman who I can't remember who it is. It's not Tuesday Weld, but it's somebody. And it's in the, and then they're, but they're in this like remote English village. And so her family lives, and they're just all these like bullies and crazy people that live in the village. Just like, and they, all they want to do is like, just like beat people up.
Yeah.
And then they get holed up in a house and end up like raping his wife, and she's, and then so then he just, he's basically driven to violence. And he's this super nerdy, like he's like a professor or something.
Sure.
And you know, and so he's just, and he just does the most crazy violent things, and then the movie's over, and it's just sort of like, thanks Peckinpah. It was just one of the, you know, it was just one of those like, what's the point of this? And I know they remade it a few years ago, of course, and I don't even remember who was in it. Or
my version of that has fallen down. I remember it's that same idea of like a nerdy, nervous guy who you don't expect to. And we saw it with my family, I think, on vacation one time. Just like, oh, we got to go to a movie. This one?
Family friendly.
Michael
movie.
Douglas? He was great in Romancing the Stone.
Yeah.
Let's see what he does.
Streets
here.
Of San Francisco.
I know. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I love that you saw that with your family.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hope you don't. I hope that doesn't happen.
Right. Well, if so, for all of us, this podcast will get a lot of
this
more
will get
likes.
A lot of
listens
likes.
If all of a sudden.
Oh, wait a minute. Okay. good to know. If our business doesn't work,
okay,
our hoodie business doesn't work.
I'll go crazy. Maybe that's the thing that makes me go crazy.
If you could go crazy, that would really help my numbers.
Okay.
Do you mind?
Well, we'll see.
Thanks.
I believe in the hoodie business.
Listen, this business is hard enough. Don't make it harder for me.
I mean, like maybe just maim someone. Just a little.
Get a bunch of rocks. Just start throwing them at people. You don't have to hit them.
Okay.
A little like tear your shirt off, that sort of thing.
Yeah,
okay,
great.
Exactly.
That sounds like a fun summer day. Yeah.
Yay. Gerlin Flood.
Oh, boy. Hello. Okay, so I've been thinking about this, and I told Sean Buckles about this. He's my best friend and my brother-in-law and a dear friend of Drew's.
Yes.
And he approved it, so I feel pretty good about this. I've been obsessed with the Muppets and Jim Henson my whole life.
Sure.
But it's like not like, yeah, of course, and that like, oh yeah, I grew up, yeah, the Muppet Show, yeah, it's Sesame Street, of course, what's on top? Mm-hmm. No, I was like weirdly obsessed. Because so I went to school, as I said, to a Catholic high school in Manhattan.
Uh-huh.
On 65th between Lex and 3rd. And there was a store when I went to school called Muppet Stuff. On Lexington, on my way down to the train where we would take every day. And I had read enough biographies about Jim Henson to know that he had a brownstone on, like, I think it's 67th between Lex and Park, which is where they started the sort of Muppets, all of that stuff came from. That was one of the studios initially. So I knew that they had the store there, and I would try and be cool because these were all new friends. It was for me, I went to school in Queens, grammar school in Queens, and then you start high school in Manhattan, and I didn't know anybody in the school. So you're trying to be super cool, like, mm-hmm. hey, yeah, I'm really awesome and you want to hang out with me.
Uh-huh.
But all I wanted to do after school was go into the Muppet Stuff store and just like look around. Oh. And somewhere I hoped that like, I don't know, Jim Henson would see me and be like, you look like a creative type. Oh. Come work in the, you know, like obsessed.
Right.
And I'm still upset. Like, and I was a very young, I was 13 when I started high school because I was born in November. So I should have kind of waited a year. Uh-huh. But so and all my friends were 14. So I was trying to be cool. But I still slept on Miss Piggy sheets and posters of Miss Piggy up in my room. Madly obsessed. And still to this day, I am, like when I first moved out here, if anybody worked for the Henson Company, I would be like, hey, hi, can I have my resume? I don't know what I do there. I don't know.
Oh,
can I work there?
So...
And even recently, a friend of mine's, her husband is writing for a show for the Henson Company.
Uh-huh.
And my heart kind of like beat faster because I was like, can I get them my resume? I don't know what are they casting? I don't know. I will do it. Like,
wow.
What do you think it is
about the Muppets? Because,
Jim Henson, for me, I just remember reading this one biography of him, and they were telling this story about how, you know, at the end of The Muppet Show, the whole audience it's like a reverse, and it's the audience, and they're all moving back and forth together singing
right,
The Muppet Show
right,
song.
Right, right, yeah, exactly, yeah.
So they were talking about how this one point, there was this bunny all the way in the back, and sometimes Jim would be working some of the Muppets, and other people would be watching the monitors to see if it played, and there was this bunny in the back going nuts and not swaying back and forth and not doing, you know, just being a crazy person. And the guys are watching this and they're going, okay, who's doing the bunny in the back? Because that's not, you're not moving. And up stands Jim Henson. And it was, to me, like, he was just having the best time.
Right.
And they talked, there's another point where they talked about when they were early days, they were going to go on some bigger show. They had local shows, but they were going on a bigger show. And they kept getting pushed.
Mm-hmm.
And the room that they were waiting in, they had like, it was almost like a closet with steam pipes and all of this stuff. So they were killing time. And they always carry a box with eyes and paint and felt and glue in case mm-hmm. something breaks down on the way, you know, mm-hmm. there.
Yep.
And so they were killing time and they just painted all of the pipes and put eyes and fur and made it this whole crazy, amazing space just because they were doing it.
Oh, yeah.
And there were photos in this book that I read. And I just thought, like, I want to be that person with that kind
right.
of creativity.
With that sort of abandon and that sort of thing.
And still
where you're
joy
just like,
of everything. There's no
yes.
worry about being stupid and just doing all of that stuff. And
pure
I just...
Pure joy.
Yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've said this before. I didn't really love cartoons, but I did love the Muppets in a way that it was very different to me. There was something very human about them to me.
Mm-hmm.
Like I understood what they were like. They, you know, what they were saying, and you know, or like just on some level that I was like, oh, you know, Miss Piggy is really vain, and like you right. know, and Fonzie is the you know the comedian that you know wants to Fozzie rather
Fozzie,
not Fonzie.
Yeah.
That's Happy Days, Drew. I was such a fan.
I was with you.
I loved
Potsy was hilarious.
Ruffles
yeah.
and
Snickers,
Lieutenant Purple, my favorite Snickers. I remember my favorite as a kid, my favorite episode was when Alice Cooper went on and did Welcome to My Nightmare. Because I was obsessed with like evil, devil, horror. Like I was like, this is amazing. But just the juxtaposition of seeing the Muppets and Alice Cooper together.
Yeah.
And it was my introduction to, you know what I mean? I was three. I was Gene Simmons from Kiss.
Oh, wow.
Because I wanted to be. And I didn't even like Kiss.
Right.
I just loved what
the
Gene
costume,
Simmons looked
yeah.
like.
Yeah.
And I was like, I want to be that.
Yeah.
Amazing.
You know? And I mean, so, you know, I had to watch the Thriller video every day after school.
Yeah.
And I,
wow.
you know, Freddy Krueger, like a little bit older, I was upset. Like, monsters were my thing. I loved monsters. And so, but I just love that the Muppets had, there is just pure joy with like Animal and Janice and,
totally.
You know, and you're just like, these are like, they don't feel polite.
Mm-mm.
In any way, and I always really loved that. And I remember, you know, sort of, and I hated Muppet Babies. Like, I just thought that was just,
terrible.
That was just like so offensive to me. I was like, I don't want to send them as babies. And and that weird, like, was it Barbara Billingsley that was the voice of the mom?
Just the legs. Yes.
And she you never saw her face, and she just the weird feet and hands that would come down. I was just like, this is terrible.
I think that was after they sold the Henson Company to Disney.
Of course. Yeah. And that's that whole thing. But I, when I go back and see my family, my mom and I love to go to a movie together. And I remember, you know, when we pick out something that we both want to go see. And I remember when the Jason Segel Muppet movie came out. And we're like, oh, that'll be good. We'll go see that together. And it's like an afternoon. We cried so hard through that entire, from the beginning to the end. It was so nostalgic. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize how... And I'm such a cynical, like, crusty, like, what is this going to be? And I was, like, so into it.
Yeah, me too.
And I just thought it was such a beautiful, I mean, because his brother was a Muppet, and it was all about fitting in, and Jason Segel was, like, the one who didn't fit in because he wasn't a Muppet. And I just thought it was so beautiful, and I thought it was just, like, so I get it, and I get people, and I have a lot of friends that work at Puppet Up, which is the Henson, it's like an improvised puppet show.
Right.
I did one class with them. It's the hardest thing.
I know.
Was so terrible at it. I got so frustrated. I'm so uncoordinated. I can't play video games. I can't do anything like that. I can barely drive. No joke. And so I, you know, but to do improv as a puppet, because you have to have, have you ever done it?
Nah.
It's like, you have to have your arm above your head for the cameras.
That alone is just a workout.
If you're tall, you have to get your head out of the way.
Right.
And my friend Colleen Smith, who's done this show before, who's amazing. She's incredible at it. And she's also really tall. I don't know how she does it, but she's so good. But they, It's this very athletic thing. My Muppets always look like they were falling asleep or doing stuff. But it was really insane to get, it was a thing where they were working together, and Patrick Bristow from the Groundlings was teaching, and they were just trading off, and they were saying, okay, if you, we'll teach you improv if you teach us puppets and back and forth. So we sort of did this sort of, what's it called? Not timeshare, but when you sort of trade, what do they do?
A barter?
Yeah, like at Burning Man. What is that called? Barter. Thank you. And so, and just like learning that was just crazy. But then we would get handed these puppets, and some of them were, and I recognized a lot of them from Emmett Otter's Jug Band Christmas.
Oh, wow.
And I was like, this was Emmett Otter, and which I loved as a kid. And I was like, you're playing with these. And it's like crazy to actually be in the scene. And I also, to go back, I was randomly at SNL, the episode where Jason Segel hosted, and the Muppets did a number on stage. And I remember walking by the stage and seeing Kermit and just seeing these, you know, and there is something that just like, it's, you get starstruck at this piece of felt that you're like, how is this?
Yeah.
How does this have this power?
And the thing to me that I've heard, because I'm obsessed, is that a lot of people like it, you know, they're like, what's it like working with a Muppet? And you're like, you know, it's weird for a second. And then you're no longer looking at the puppeteer. You're looking at the Muppet and you're in the scene with them.
Right.
You're having a conversation. It's totally natural.
Absolutely.
They work so hard. There's all this stuff. I'm sure if you saw the Elmo.
Yeah,
which is awkward. The documentary about holding the mouth a little open and constantly having them moving and all of these things you have to do, and it works.
Yeah. It's crazy how it's not how you think it's going to work either. Right. Like, it's not like physically moving your hand up and down. That sort of like makes the mouth weird. It's this flicking thing you have to do, and it was all this stuff. It was so much coordination. But they also will say, like, the sort of the Muppets take over too. Like, they sort of get their hand, and once they get good at the technical aspects of it, they're just like, it's just like when you're an actor and you put on the wig or you put on the shoes and you're like, I am this person,
character,
and it sort of takes over. And you know, it's really crazy. So did you go to the Muppet store? I mean,
all the time.
Yes.
Like, saving money, still trying to be cool with my friends, but like buying stuff. I still have my Miss Piggy mug.
There you go. Yeah.
I was obsessed with them.
I love the joy in which you told both those stories of how he did his job, which is fun to me. Like, I live in the neighborhood of Los Feliz where like the Disney Brothers first office is.
Nice. Yeah.
Uh-huh. And it's like, to live in a creative city, to be like, I'm in the same streets where that global thing was created.
Yeah.
It's like, inspiring it's amazing, to me in a weird way.
I used to live on Kingswell, right? Where his house was, Disney's house was. And his first studio is down.
It's like a little fax machine coffee shop.
Totally. And you know, yeah, it's magical. You walk in there, like, this is where Walt Disney created this thing. And yeah, they had no idea when they were making it. And I think that's where the best art comes from. Mm-hmm. And I know I mention him every episode, but I go back to, like, John Waters and Divine went to high school together.
Right.
And they were like, let's make movies together. Like, they know, you know, and I just, this is a even bigger, crazier leap, but I was so touched. There was a movie I just saw at Outfest, and everybody go stay with me because it sounds crazy, but there's a cartoonist named Tom of Finland.
Oh, sure.
And okay, so you know his work, but you would probably, Casey, you'd probably have seen it before. It's very iconic, blown up, hyper sexual, like gay military guys or like biker guys, and it's all black and white, and it's you know,
it's beautiful.
It's beautiful art. And, okay, so there was a biopic about Tom of Finland at Outfest, and of course it's packed, and I'm like, this is going to be, and biopics are my least favorite kind of movies because I'm like, I don't care about this or this or this or this. And it's very hard for me. I thought it was incredible. And it was this, the story of this guy who fought in, he was from Finland. He fought in World War II. He started drawing these things because it was what was in his mind. And he was, and it was how he could express. And back then, like, it was a calling card. He would draw these things and hand them to other guys. And that was his way of like going, hey, are you like me? Wow. Are we going to, you know? And it was all this stuff about like all the coded language about just the drawing of this stuff. And then he was doing it and it was sort of leaking out and it was very illegal in Finland to sort of have any, it was considered pornographic in any way. He started, there was some editor somewhere in the United States that started picking up on his art, and he couldn't use his real name. So his real name was something that sounded similar to Tom. And then they were like, he's from Finland, so we'll call him Tom of Finland. And they started doing this art, and it became a huge movement. And it was like, it was a huge thing. And then in the 70s, I mean, he started doing this in like the late 40s. Mm-hmm. In the 70s, when he was older, he's getting all this fan mail from these guys that are like, you saved my life, or like, you made me feel okay. And he had no idea. And so they're like, please come to California. And he's like, I'm going to California because I guess these people like what I do. How weird is that? I've always wanted to go. And he shows up and there are all these men in this whole party. And they're like, we are your men that you've created. And it's like, and he's so dumbfounded.
Yeah.
And he has no idea of even understanding how, what he was doing. And it was just coming from a place of, I drew what I liked.
And needed to do.
And needed to do.
Yeah.
And it wasn't coming from any sort of cynical place of like, this is going to sell. This is what, you know, I'm not, you know. And I just thought it was such a beautiful story that like, this guy was, and he had no ambition to, you know, make money or anything. And it was just, it was literally a matter of.
Did he ultimately make money?
I think so. I think he did. I'm sure not nearly as much as what he did. But there's a foundation in Silver Lake, the Tom of Finland Foundation, which I have never been and I would love to go. But I mean, I knew nothing about him. I knew his artwork and I knew, you know, and I was like, and I'm not into the like leather scene and all that kind of stuff. I mean, I, you know, grew up watching Police Academy movies. And so I was always like fighting, like, that's not what gay bars are like. But there are a lot that are like that. You know, and it's just not really in, you know, my scene. And so I just was never that interesting to me.
Yeah.
And yet I was like, this is, what an incredible thing. Like, you know, and it is such a thing where, you know, when you come from a place of joy or truth or like, I'm just going to do what I think is important or like what I think is, you know, coming from me, but not thinking about like how do I
monetize this?
You know, and I always know that like, when I, you know, when you meet with people to like write something or create, when they start talking about like what's trending or like what's the hot thing, I know we're in trouble.
Right.
I'm like, oh boy, we got to find out, what do we like to do?
What do we want to do?
What do we want to say?
Yeah.
And with the internet now, like everybody, there's an audience for everything, you know? Mm-hmm. And it's such a nice way to just go do your thing and don't worry about like the, you know, and be that rabbit in the back, you know, be that bunny, you know, and be that thing because that's what we're here for, you know, it's not where we, you know, and you know, so...
That's that. My husband, Kevin, who you know well, is a sound supervisor. And when he was first starting out, people, like some people that he worked with, were like, you need to go out for drinks. You need to do this. You need to socialize. Mm-hmm. And that's just not him. Like, he's happy in our home, as you well know. Like,
yeah.
So, like, super. But he's just not that, like, go get him handshake kind of. Like,
yeah.
He's like this, I call him my awkward earnest boy. He's so sweet and lovely.
He's wonderful. He's lovely.
He's just the best. But you got to get to know him. And if you click with him, and he came to me, he said, do I really have to do all that? Mm-hmm. I said, no, because then you're putting on this personality.
No. And I, when I moved out here, I was told all the same things, especially like, you're an actor. You need to go out there and meet and network and do. And I did that for a long time,
sure,
and it did nothing for me. It
made
me
exhaust you.
Exhausted me. I felt gross. I was like, I have to. You know, and to this day, I remember I ran into somebody who was like, come with me to this party. And I was like, and I was doing something else. I mean, it was like on the street, and this guy wanted me to come with him to a party. And he was like, oh, it's going to be, they're going to be like four casting directors there. And I was like, you know what? That means nothing to me. That's so gross that that's how you're thinking about, like, why we're going to go to a party.
How fun could that party be?
And I was like, but I'm also like, how are you going to a party with that mentality?
Yeah, right.
And like, I already told you I had plans. Okay. So would I ditch my friend who I'm with right now to, I'm like, I'm so happy that like, I don't have to do that. And like, and when you realize like, it's not about that, it's not about, you know, and there's some people who schmooze and who work so brilliantly in that way. I am not that person. I like people and I like to go out and see people, but I'm, you know, there's so many people that I want to go up to and go, I do not want a job. If it happens, great. We all love to work. We all love to do things. But I'm not doing that because it's so strange that you would think, you know, and it makes me sad that, you know, and people, you know, when you run into people and I say, how are you? And they're like, I'm great. I'm working on five projects and I'm doing this and I have a web series and I have another idea. And hey, we should get together. And I'm like,
how are you?
How are you?
That's
what's going on? Yeah.
That's the big thing I say in auditions. What's new and exciting so that it leaves it open.
Okay. Yes.
And if they're like, well, I'm on a veil for a national commercial, fingers crossed and this and that. I'm like, okay, so I know nothing about you.
I know nothing about you.
You told me, but if you come back to me and say like, oh my God, I just had this whirlwind trip and I was with my family. Oh my God, what was that like? Where'd you go? What'd you do? Like, your you know, girlfriend's family's visiting. How's that? Like that, you know, and now I remember you as a person who, you know.
Right, exactly. I don't know if we've established you're a casting director. I don't think we've said that in the beginning. So that's what you do, work in casting. And it's like, you see actors and all the, and it's gotta be so crazy to just be like, oh, I just want to know you. I just want to get to know you. And also, like, part of the fun of the job has to be just, like, meeting people, like, getting to know who they are and what they're about. And
Absolutely.
Also, like, you know, and I think, and I've just learned from watching, you know, actor or just professionals in general that I respected how they, and then was like, oh, they don't really have to talk about work all the time because they're working all the time. And a job is a job.
Yeah.
It's a job. And so, like, the last thing I want to do is talk about work, you know, and it's like, And
it's important. Like when I first saw you, I'm like, oh, you're working on this. Oh, that's great. Cool.
Absolutely.
Anyway, moving on.
Of course. Like you're not going to not talk about
it.
Also, when you put something in context, if somebody says, I want to sit down and have a meeting with you about boom.
Yes.
That's when you talk about work.
Right.
We've set that.
Totally.
But when you're just hanging out, I'm just like, it's the most exhausting thing for people. And I just feel like a lot of people are really good people. They just think they have to talk like that in order to sound important or busy or what they're doing. And it's like, so it's just one of those things that, you know.
Yeah. Doing the Hollywood shuffle. The thing, you know, you talk about when like you have to go to this party because there's four casting directors there. Yeah. It's also, do you think I don't know what you're doing?
Right.
And
right.
does that not turn me off? You know, if they come up like, hey, I'm a big fan of your work. You do.
I know.
You know,
I know.
And I'm like, I want to drink rosé with my friends.
I know. I want to be relaxed and have fun. And like, and also, you know, do you, it's not Lana Turner at Schwab's. Like, it's not like you're going to walk into a party and be like, casting people are going to turn around and go, I mean, or the college recruiter is going to see the kid playing basketball.
Exactly. Right.
It's the same idea. Like, when you're a kid, that's how you think it is. Like, if I'm going to walk into a party, everyone's going to turn around and be like, who is that?
Yeah.
You know? And it's like, things have to happen organically. How
totally.
Terrible would it be? Also, casting directors want a break too. They want to sit by the pool and drink rosé with their friends. They're not sitting out there going, I'm casting, I'm working. Oh, I need to meet. Oh, another actor? Great. Right. It's like,
or
oh
yeah,
my
like
God.
I have sides in my bag. Right. You, read these now. Stop.
You know, here we go. See you on set Monday morning. Have a light meal before. It's like, I don't know. It's like, what does any of that mean? It's yeah. so like yeah. of a different, it's not real. And it's just a thing where you're like, and yeah, like I would go into a party just knowing who people, ugh, it's just so dark and creepy to me that yeah. like, that you would look at people that way. And people can feel it. People aren't dumb. They're not like, oh, you're working me right now. Yeah. And I could
particularly
tell.
For what I do, you have to see the truth and behind what they're, you know, it's like, yes. I believe what you're saying. You're really funny. You're this or that.
Right.
I believe it. Or if that's like, that felt false to me.
Right, yeah. right.
So if I'm at a party.
Feels false.
And
yeah.
someone's coming at me, I'll sometimes lie and say I work in accounting.
I'm sure. I'm sure. I totally
yeah.
get it.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Well, like, it's hard. Well, it's like, I've had to learn when I take Lyft all the time now and
yeah.
at night I don't like to drive a lot because I kind of can't drive and I like to drink but I
being safe
but I'm being safe,
safe
you know
that's smart
but I don't always tell Lyft drivers that I'm an actor just because sure. it starts the whole conversation. I'm like when they say it's like I say I'm an actor and it's as if I'm saying here's my audition for you
right.
and it's like no I'm just that's literally yeah. what I do
yeah
or my favorite is what have I seen you in
uh-huh right.
Well, or what I have know. You worked on? It's yeah. like, I don't know. What have you seen? Yeah. I don't know. I've done
know.
A lot of stuff.
I know.
Yeah.
I
don't make me do the
other day that was, it was rough because he was driving so insanely slowly where it was like, I was losing my mind and I was running late to something and I was already like kind of in a hurry and I got in and I was like, and he's kind of checking the map and I'm like, I'll tell you exactly where to go. You're going to go right down Sunset. It's super easy. It's just a straight shot, you know? And I was like, and he's like, I'm just looking at the thing. And then I was trying to be patient, but I was just like, we got to go. We got to get it. And halfway through, after I feel like I was being a total jerk, he's like, oh, have I seen you on something? And then it was me digging through my resume to say, and I was like, I don't know what you've seen.
Just say yes to something.
And I was
quick.
Like, yeah. I was like, maybe I'm an actor. Oh, wow. And then he was like, I think I'd like to be an actor. Like, do you just get auditions like on Craigslist or?
Oh, how
to, and I was like,
honey,
I was like, please don't do it. Like, yeah. if you don't have it, and it's not easy. Yeah. It's not thing. I'm also like not here to pitch.
Right.
myself or this life on
yeah.
you,
yeah.
you know, but it's weird. It's like telling people you're, just this, like a magician or a card or some like bizarro thing. And you're like, yeah. no, it's just what I do. And it's,
right.
I love my job, but it's also not like, you know? And so, yeah, sometimes you just kind of have to, but I've also been like, I have to just make up something completely differently. Cause if I say I'm a writer, it's the same thing.
Right.
If I say I'm a teacher.
Right. Accountant shuts everybody
and then
down.
That
they
really,
know what that
they
is.
Don't know what that is.
They know, they don't care. It's right. not sexy.
That's good. That's what I should say. But then I just feel like I'd have to go back to my improv skills and be an expert talker and be like, I'm going to make up accounting information, but
they don't,
no one follows
care.
Care.
No one pursues it.
No one has a follow-up question.
Oh, yeah. That's so good to know.
What company yeah. are you with?
Oh,
yeah.
You just
make up anything. H&R Block.
Lelimer and Clocks.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right.
They're
right,
great.
Sure, yeah.
Just, it's so, you just say the most base thing. And people are like, wow, you know a lot about the industry. And I was like, oh, I'm just a fan of television and film.
I have Entertainment Weekly.
Yeah. That's all, yeah. Because it's just, sometimes I can see...
Well, because they think, I mean, because a lot of people too, they think you literally have a direct line of them getting a job,
right.
which is not even true. Like you, yeah. it's like so many people involved in everything. Like, but they will see as immediately like, I have to impress you and you're going to maybe, you could hire me right now, mm-hmm. which is like, it's just, it's, yeah, that's really, that's intense. And also, you just want to just be people together.
Yes.
Just like, come on, let you know.
I mean, I know we all live in LA. Odds
sure.
are we work in the industry.
Right, of course.
But also, you're from the Midwest and yep. went to an all male college,
right.
which is
yes.
Catholic college, which is fascinating.
Yes.
And
yeah.
those stories I want to hear.
I
know.
And that's the thing. That's actually what is makes you more interesting than like the Doritos commercial you're on.
Right,
for,
yeah.
Which I hope you book it.
Right.
I hope you
Thank
get
you.
It and make lots of money, Casey.
Yeah. But no, it is true. Like, I think, and also people back home, and that happens out here too, but it feels like more back home. The thing that they're most excited about is like something that I spent 4 hours of my
yes,
life on,
exactly.
you know?
Exactly. I know.
Or something.
Exactly. Exactly.
And it's like, oh, this, yeah, this, they, this short film that I worked all year on that I'm trying to get people to watch. You want? Have you seen that? No, no, no. But I did see you in that Cracker commercial yep. during the baseball game. Okay, yep. yeah, well,
great, great, great.
Exactly. So I know. And they're like, it's beyond, you know, yeah. making anybody.
I had that with, you know, I'd worked assistant, associate, working my mm-hmm. way up, and Marcy Leroff made me a co-casting director on Ghost of Girlfriends Past with Matthew McConaughey oh, and right. Jen Garner. Mm-hmm. And I was so excited. I was in the main title credits. It was a big deal. Like, it was a yeah. big deal, you know? And, of course, my in-laws, they are who they are. I love them. Yeah. Did not go to the theater to see this. Not, you know, like, why right, would they right, do that? They right, waited until it was on yes. Netflix or whatever yeah, it was. Yeah. And they said, I saw your name in the end credits.
Uh-huh. Okay.
That wasn't the big deal.
right.
I don't really like Matthew McConaughey, but that Jen Garner sure is sweet. And it's like,
wow.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I didn't write it. Yeah.
I didn't write. I know exactly.
I didn't direct it.
Yeah.
And
they were attached.
right.
But everybody else, like, how about like Emma Stone? She was in it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, that was pretty
righteous.
Also,
how about I had a job yeah. that I was like doing yeah. this really cool. I was in yeah. a major movie and like I got to be, you know, and this is what I love. Doing, but I know it's very strange. It's yeah. people's
and
opinion.
How do they dismiss it? Because it is in their home,
right?
Too.
Sure.
Yes.
So it's so easy to be like, oh yeah, I didn't like that. Yeah,
uh-huh.
like,
I know.
I did.
Know. Yeah.
I had a great time.
I had a really good time doing it.
and you know,
was,
paid my rent too.
Yeah,
so win-win.
Exactly. Win-win. well, we're out of time. We're
oh,
way
gosh.
Over time.
Oh,
what
boy.
We've done.
Oh no.
I know. We should wrap it up. What have we learned? Start a hoodie business.
yes, number one.
Number okay, one. So we're starting that immediately after yes, recording this. So okay. we're going to start a hoodie business.
Office space. Find
an office space. Mm-hmm. We'll involve the Muppets and a treehouse.
If we get any arguments, I won't fight them.
No violence. okay, no, Sherilyn and I can't promise that.
No, okay. not at
no
all.
From you.
No yeah. problem. I'll take it.
I want to thank my guests, Sherilyn Flood and Casey Faye. Thank y'all so much for being on the show.
Thanks
yeah,
for having us.
This was so fun.
Oh my God, it was really fun. And I feel very refreshed, rejuvenated, and relaxed.
And now we'll go back out into the valley heat.
Yes, exactly.
And talk about go our big. Careers.
Exactly.
Fantastic.
I'm very busy. I've got lots of projects to tell you all about. this has been another episode of Drew Droege's Minor Revelations. Thank you for listening, and have a week.